From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, fresh back from San Diego, where we were at the Science of Aliens exhibit at the San Diego Air and Space Museum on Saturday. Had a wonderful time, sponsored by AM 600 Kogo, our affiliate there. Great people in San Diego, let me tell you. 500 strong showing up. We just had a great time, lasted for hours. And thank you again, folks at Kogo, for just the wonderful time. Great opportunity. Here's what's happening. In a very surprising discovery about where higher life can thrive, scientists for the very first time found a shrimp-like creature and a jellyfish frolicking beneath a massive Antarctic ice sheet. 600 feet below the ice, where no light shines, scientists had figured nothing much more than a few microbes could exist. That's why a NASA team was very surprised when they lowered a video camera to get the first long look at the underbelly of an ice sheet in Antarctica. A curious shrimp-like creature just came swimming by and then parked itself on the camera's cable. Scientists also pulled up a tentacle they believed came from a foot-long jellyfish. So they're in shock about things like that. As a matter of fact, at the Science of Aliens exhibit in San Diego, they had Earth creatures there, models of them that are in the sea that look like some of the scariest things I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen some of them before. New pictures have been released of the Martian moon Phobos, acquired by the European Mars Express probe during its recent flybys. The images reveal details down to a resolution of just 4.4 m per pixel. You can see the rest of this story at coasttocoastam.com, right under Richard C. Hoagland's name in the left-hand corner. Richard will be our guest in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. London's Gatwick Airport has apologized after a man wearing a T-shirt with the slogan, "Freedom or Die," was asked to turn it inside out because it would be threatening. The 38-year-old man was stopped by security officers as he headed for a family skiing holiday in Austria. Gatwick apologized for the incident, according to a spokesperson, stressing that the airport does not apply a policy related to appropriate or inappropriate T-shirt slogans worn by passengers passing through airport security. Well, the Federal Communications Commission has unveiled some details of its broadband plan, which aims to speed up web connections and make high-speed internet available to more Americans now. The commission plans to use educational programs and an expansion of broadband internet infrastructure to give 90% of Americans high-speed internet access at home by 2020. For more than two decades, the Social Security collected more money in payroll taxes than it paid out in benefits, billions more each year. Not anymore. This year, for the first time since the 1980s when Congress last overhauled the Social Security system, the retirement program is projected to pay out more in benefits than it collects in taxes, nearly $29 billion more. Sounds like a good time to start tapping the nest egg, doesn't it? Well, too bad the federal government has already done that, spending that money over the years on other programs, preferring to borrow from Social Security rather than foreign creditors. In return, the Treasury Department issued a stack of IOUs in the form of Treasury bonds. Social Security's shortfall will not affect current benefits, as long as the IOUs last. The benefits will keep flowing. That's a key phrase, though, as long as the IOUs last. Experts say it is a warning sign that the program's finances are deteriorating. Social Security is projected to drain its trust funds by 2037, unless Congress acts, and there's concern that the looming crisis will lead to reduced benefits. Trends expert Gerald Celente on the line with us here. Gerald, does it look like they're going to be around at all by 2037? We lost Gerald Celente. Maybe we'll try to get him back before the end of this hour. A new Democratic Senate bill to tame the financial markets would give the government new powers to break up firms that threaten the economy and would force the industry to pay for its failures. The bill would still be the biggest overhaul of regulation since the New Deal. It comes 18 months after the Wall Street's failures helped plunge the nation into a deep recession. a leaner Federal Reserve would gain new powers to regulate the size and the activities of the nation's largest financial firms. The bill would create a Consumer Protection Bureau within the Federal Reserve to write regulations governing all lending transactions. Bank regulators, however, could appeal those regulations if they believe they would affect the health of the banking system. And we've got Gerald Celente on the line with us again. Hey, Gerald, how are you?
Very good. You know, I was down in Chile at the earthquake.
That's what I heard. You were up in a high-rise when it
happened. Yep, I was 14 stories up in the Crown Plaza Hotel when it hit at 3:30 in the morning. What a story.
Oh, my gosh. You felt it all, didn't you?
Oh, it was bedlam. Televisions flying, you know, the lamps, lights going out, bureau drawers coming out, the mass destruction of the building. It didn't go down, but it was a story in self-defense, I'll tell you that.
Hey, Gerald, this Social Security system where they're talking about by 2037, they could be broke unless they change things. And now, you know, they've been tapping into the money for years. Now the Social Security system is not collecting more money than it's paying out. It's in trouble, isn't it?
It's bigger than that. The government is into Social Security for some $2.5 trillion. But just look what happened today with Moody's Investor Services, the credit rating agency. They fired a warning shot at the U.S. saying they're borrowing too much and they're going to begin to lower the credit if it keeps up. They're going to have to. The great crash is underway. The collapse of 2010 is happening before us. This is just another element, the canary in the mine cage that says how much trouble we're really in. This money's not going to be paid back. What they're going to do, George, is they're going to cut benefits. They're going to increase taxes across the board, not only in employment. They're going to get the money any way they can, and they're going to raise the retirement age.
How did we let them tap into the Social Security fund and borrow money to keep the government going, Joe?
Remember they wanted to privatize it?
Yes.
It's the same criminal group. You know, yeah, I heard about that story you were talking about, jellyfish and shrimp-like creatures.
Yeah.
In Antarctica? Yeah, the politicians, that's who they are. They got to Antarctica. It's the same criminal group. They're either in Wall Street or in Washington. It's the same game. Rob as much money from the people as you can and get it any way you can get it.
And forget about fixing it, and everybody's screwed.
Well, yeah, I mean, who knows? Nobody will remember the names of the politicians that robbed us blind.
No, not at all. All right, Gerald, I'm glad you're well.
Hey, thank you, George.
Gerald Celente, trendsresearch.com. It'll be linked up at our Twitter feed. In Great Falls, Montana, a Great Falls man says he was wrongly fired from his job for using medical marijuana. He's filed a $500,000 lawsuit against his former employer. Mike Babbitt, in a complaint filed against the Loafin' Jug, said he was discriminated against, lost wages, and suffered other monetary damages. Babbitt says he is HIV positive and is qualified to receive medical marijuana. In Iowa City, Iowa, police there have arrested a woman who attacked her sister with the lid from a toilet tank. Yep. According to police, she removed the lid, smashed her sister during a fight. Authorities say the sister suffered an injured foot and a finger. And listen to this one. A new lipstick has gone on sale that shows when women are in the mood. I kid you not. The lip product changes from clear to deep crimson as the wearer feels more and more frisky. It works by reacting a woman's body chemistry. Each $18.50 tube comes with a color chart so guys can figure out how their partner is feeling. Unbelievable. Up next, I'll tell you who's feeling good these days, Richard C. Hoagland from TheEnterpriseMission.com. He's our special guest this hour when we come right back. Now, last week, Richard C. Hoagland was letting us know that some pictures of Phobos would be coming down and that there's been some controversy over these pictures. Some people arguing that there's something very strange about this Martian moon. Well, let's let Richard talk about it. Here he is. Hey, Richard, how are you?
Good evening, George.
This is very strange.
Have I got a story for you?
Let's talk about the possibilities first. What they've been talking about this for at least a few weeks.
Well, they've actually been talking about it for almost 50 years.
Well, you know what I mean. These pictures, they are confused over what's going on this moon.
Well, let me give you a little chronology. Several years ago, around 2003, the European Space Agency, which is a kind of like a European NASA, it's a consortium of most of the European countries, France, Germany, Britain, Belgium, Italy, etc., got together, spent some money, put a spacecraft together called Mars Express, and sent it to Mars into Martian orbit. That's not unusual. There have been a lot of spacecraft in Mars orbit, Russian, American, but this was the first European unmanned robot orbiting Mars in a very unusual orbit. The close point of the orbit is something like 100, 200 miles up. The farthest point is in excess of 10,000, maybe 30,000 miles out. I forget the exact far distance. And it takes it hours and hours and hours to go around Mars once, something like maybe 24 hours, something like that. So it's synced up with the Martian rotation. It's been there since 2003. In the last few weeks, they planned a program, a campaign, where they would direct this spacecraft in a series of close flybys of the inner Martian moon called Phobos, which orbits around 6,000 miles above the center of Mars and maybe 3,000 miles above the actual surface, distance between Los Angeles and New York. In these close passes, there's like a dozen of them in this window, they were doing a lot of different observations. They were tracking the trajectory of the spacecraft because that gives you the gravity of this little moon, which is only about 20 miles across, biggest on its axis. It looks like a knobbly potato. It's got craters. It looks like it's been beaten to hell in a handbasket, been there for billions of years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And it's falling toward Mars, isn't it, slowly?
Very, 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 very slightly.
Okay.
Back in the early parts of the 20th century, last parts of the 19th century, an astronomer named Douglas Sharpless, working at the Lowell Observatory in Arizona, not too far from where I am tonight, began looking at the what he called secular acceleration of Phobos, meaning when they took photos several years apart, instead of following Newton's laws of gravity, the moon appeared to be slightly ahead of where it should have been in its orbit, which means it's accelerating, which means it's falling toward Mars because the lower orbit moves faster and faster, which is kind of impossible. I mean, if something's been there billions of years, why would it suddenly now be in what some have estimated to be the last 10 million years of its existence, which is like a blink of an eye in a cosmological timescale?
Yeah, it's almost like it's in a small free fall.
That, well, yeah, but an entry year is not a lot in any one year, but, you know, a year, a million years, 10 million years, it adds up. It's like spending money in the Fed. Anyway, thinking of Gerald Salanti there. Anyway, so the concept developed over the decades in the late 19th, earliest 20th century, that maybe there was something really interesting about this little moon. Remember, 20 miles across, the size of a small village or, you know, tiny town. And in 1966, two major global astronomers, I.S. Shklovsky, a brilliant Russian astrophysicist, and a good friend of ours, Carl Sagan, whose first claim to fame was when he did this, co-authored a book called Intelligent Life in the Universe. Hardcover book, classic. Everybody go out and find a copy. You'll want it on your bookshelf after tonight, okay? I guarantee you, you're going to want this book. Because in that book, they proposed, Shklovsky really did it, and Sagan followed him, agreeing that the data indicated that Phobos might not be natural. It might actually be a very big, big, big space station. An artificial moon that had been placed in orbit by the Martians. That, this is the 1960s.
And that obviously looked a little better than what it looks now.
Exactly. So now we fast forward the film to the first Mariner mission to Mars, the flyby. Didn't take pictures of Phobos. It was in 1965. Then we get to the first American spacecraft to orbit Mars called Mariner 9 in 1971. And in Sagan's book, Cosmic Connection, He has a whole chapter devoted to Phobos and the incredible, arduous struggles he had within NASA to get them to take, in the space of several years that the spacecraft orbited Mars before it fell silent, even one or two pictures of Phobos. Now, looking back, I understand now in hindsight tonight, looking at what's on my screen that's come from this European mission, I understand why the problems of getting NASA to take a close-up picture of Phobos.
Why?
Because NASA, or some ones in NASA, knew that ultimately the artificial space station model was correct. And I'm watching on this screen tonight, which I'm going to put up on Enterprise in the next few hours, if not days, and I'll tell you why it may take longer than a few hours as we get through the story. What the Europeans gave us in the wee hours of this morning, I'm sitting here literally clicking on the Phobos blog.
I knew you couldn't wait for this.
Well, it's only been a week, George.
That's true.
They took the pictures last Sunday, March 7th.
They were supposed to come out on Wednesday, right?
Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then, remember, I've been sending you emails, have I not?
You've been clogging.
Every single day I've been sending you an update. You know, 24 hours and counting.
Yeah.
36 hours and counting. 48 hours. Because I wanted you to see that this was getting weirder and weirder and weirder. This, look, we live in the era of supercomputers, right? Everything we do, what you do there in the studio, what I do at Enterprise, what all our listeners are doing with their cell phones and their Facebooks and Twitters and all that, it's all digital. It's all nanosecond technology. The computers are living at billions of times our rate of time. And they can process millions of calculations in the blink of an eye. What took them from Sunday to Sunday, a whole week, to produce, get this, two pictures of this moon in this close-up flyby last Sunday?
Wow.
Answer? It took them a week to figure out how to confuse and obscure and bury the artificial structures that are all over the surface of this moon in noise.
Do you know what you're saying?
I know exactly what I'm saying, because it was only tonight, after I've been working on this all day, that I figured out an algorithm that can go in and subtract some of that noise to where you can see the structures to match with the farther away shots taken in previous years, both by Mars Express and by the American spacecraft called Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has taken some amazing color views, but from much farther away.
That's why you've been working on this night and day.
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Not a big surprise.
Well, last week, when they were talking about how baffled scientists were about this moon.
Well, remember, you sent me a news clipping.
Yeah. That cited several possibilities.
Yeah, and what you did was you asked me a question, what does this mean?
Yep.
And I told you. And at the end of the clipping, there was an update. Remember you had read it on the night before on the air?
Yes.
And then there was an update, and the update was that before we got these images, before we got the pictures, the close flyby on the night side of Phobos within, I think it was 50, 60 miles, had given them enough radio tracking data to where the gravity of the moon in its misshapen potato, you know, configuration had pulled on the spacecraft trajectory, the flyby track, you know, around Mars, to where they could reconstruct the interior lumpiness of the gravity field distribution inside the moon, or moonlet. We should really call it a moonlet.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, they concluded in the story you sent me that Phobos has huge hollow caverns or spaces or volumes inside. And you put that together with what I'm seeing in these images, cleaned up just a little bit, and I'm going to work a lot more, and I'm going to get some other colleagues to help me with the processing. But we have got the goods, and I think we're supposed to. Because I don't think if they really, really, really wanted to make this so no one would know, they would have done the obscuration in the way that with commercial programs, I could in one day undo their noise, their obscuration, and reveal the amazing ruins that we're seeing.
This is an amazing story. Richard, stay with us, because I want to ask you when we come back, if this indeed is a satellite spaceship, how come it's not functioning anymore? What happened? Where'd they go? Why did they just leave it up there? We'll be back in a moment with Richard C. Hoagland, and we'll take a few calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Tricia McKenna joins me as we talk about ancient mysteries. Should be fascinating. And when we come right back, it's more with Richard C. Hoagland and his theories on Coast to Coast AM. So, Richard, if this moon happened to have been in a spaceship from years gone past, what happened to it? How come it's not functioning anymore?
Well, this was destroyed, along with a lot of other stuff from the solar system in our model, 65 million years ago.
Okay.
During the Great War that Joseph Farrell and I have been working on figuring out, along with the late Tom Van Flandern, that took place, that destroyed an entire planet which Mars used to orbit. And the debris, when you destroy a planet and send all that shrapnel in the form of ultrafine dust, literally trillions and trillions and trillions of tons, planetary mass divided into tiny particles moving at 10, 20, 30 miles per second, the sandblasting effect is lethal and overwhelmingly destructive. And that's the solar system that we live in the residue of something incredibly phantasmagorical that once was and is no more. And all we now see on these various surfaces and on these various objects, some of which we think we call asteroids, and it turns out that they're like Phobos, except they're orbiting the sun. This is a story that is so big, George. It is so monumental. It is of such, may I use the term, biblical proportion, what happened and how we happen to be on this one little green dot still surviving in the middle of all this incredible, awesomely tragic destruction. And our space program tonight is moribund because they're basically between a rock and a hard place. If we really go out there the way we should be doing, all these nations now going back to the moon, thinking of going to Mars,
except us,
then somebody, somewhere, sometime that is not captured by the intel agencies and the suppressors and the folks that don't want us to know our real history are going to trip over this stuff and make it public, and everything changes. I think we're on the precipice, on the threshold of stunning paradigm changes that will not only revolutionize who we think we are, but will change the very economics of the planet on which we live and to which everyone is currently almost in servitude. This is the moment of potential liberation, and this is why I find it so interesting that this data has come back almost on the eve of Obama's proposed space summit, which you and me and this audience obviously created.
I've got to tell you, it was strange that after we did that four-hour program with you about NASA, that a day later they came out with an announcement that there'd be a summit on NASA sometime in April. I mean, like a day later,
yes,
without an agenda.
But with no agenda, with no speakers, with no location. What White House in history has ever come out with an announcement at a major presidential summit, which as you take months and months and months of preparation and planning and papers and vetting people and various political jockeying and all that, and announces it a night after a national radio show with a few people, you know, calling in and then making emails to the White House.
I suggest, as you do, that probably in the morning, somebody walked into the president's office or in whatever roundtable meeting they were having and said, look, we got to set a meeting and we have to announce it, but I don't know what we're going to talk about at the meeting, but we better do it now. And I think they probably all said, okay, let's do it.
You know, I have an even more interesting possibility.
Go ahead.
That Barack and Michelle were lying there in bed listening to you and me and our guests.
You would come up with something like that. Well, that's possible, too.
The point is, look, we stand at this fulcrum, which is why this audience, this very special Coast family, now can really make some history. I would do several things if I was listening to the show tonight. One is I would go to enterprisemission.com. I would scroll down from the top of the page to the second banner, which is the link to a paper I wrote called The Last Frontier of Hope, which is a prescription for a real space program rooted in the legacy of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, James Webb, and how we made it to the moon. And more important, in that paper are all the careful listings of all the economic returns that this nation has benefited from, even 40, 50 years later, because of the investments we made in a project called Project Apollo. I think there is some kind of plan behind the scenes waiting for the American people to kind of get with the program, to have the imagination and vision that we have always been known for, to where we will put the resources together, demand the presidency and the Congress a real space program a la Kennedy and his vision, and take the technology we have now, which could literally, George, send a human expedition like Apollo astronauts, like the guys and gals who are listening to us in Houston tonight, and put together the proper spaceships within the next decade, the next 10 years, and go and land on Phobos. Do you realize it is easier to go from Earth orbit to Phobos and back to Earth than it is to go and land on the surface of our own moon?
Yep. Sure is.
The energies, if you look at the equations, the energies are there. It is easier, and that's why there have been a lot of people post the Augustine Commission, which was this commission set up by Barack Obama when he took office to study NASA, to study the future, and they basically said that President Bush's plan was a day late and a dollar short. We were not able to fund it. It was just the same old, just going back to the moon. Been there, done that. There's no real benefit in the short term from doing that. And they recommended that the administration consider missions to asteroids, hint, hint, wink, wink, or, and this is what's really interesting, a mission, a manned mission, a human mission to Phobos, not to Mars, which is very difficult, very expensive, and in fact could be dangerous because we don't really know how to do that yet. But we do know how to go from Earth to Phobos and back to Earth. And tonight I can say without equivocation that the riches, the prize at the end of that journey is the whatever's inside this huge spaceship, this 20-mile diameter spaceship with libraries and control rooms and God knows what else, which the tracking data says is hollow with interior caverns and spaces. Well, those are obviously the hangar decks for other smaller spacecraft.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it is an oh my gosh.
Now, it is.
Let me tell you what I'm waiting for now.
All right.
The other instrumentation that was carried on Mars Express is scanned and scanned and scanned. I mean, they spent 12 passes scanning this moon, you know, till the cows come home. They also did deep scan radar with the Marsis radar that the Mars Express spacecraft carries. It will give us images, ghostly images of the interior structures inside Phobos, because the radar waves will go right through the surface, right through miles and miles of what everybody has thought up to now is rock. It's not rock. It's probably made of carbon fiber composites. And the reason I know that is because the surface spectral scans keep coming back carbonaceous chondrite, which is a technical term for a kind of an asteroid or meteor, which has lots and lots of carbon-rich stuff, organics.
What a story. Let's take a few calls. Almost out of time here, Richard. Albert in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the wildcard line. Go ahead, Albert.
Hey, I was just wondering if you knew of Ron Stewart. He made the APEP, Advanced Photo Extraction Process, and in a recent article in Examiner.com, featured in February 24, 2010, he claims that using his method, he found alien base and a UFO in Apollo 11 landing photos.
Yeah, unfortunately, I hate to disappoint everybody. All that is total bunk. That is not a real process. It's a bunch of fake stuff. It's more UFO nonsense. It's not real science. The programs we're working with are real. I'm going to post this on Enterprise. Everybody can look at it. They can critique it. I'm going to put comparative imagery from other flybys. I've got such stunning geometry on parts of Phobos that were not photographed on this pass but I've been accumulating quietly the ESSA database and the MRO database, and I'm going to put up a paper on this that is going to knock everyone's socks off and hopefully will help shape policy at the Obama summit on April 15th. We've got literally, George, 1 month to seize the future.
When are they supposed to announce what the agenda is?
Nothing. No one knows. That's what's so cockamamie about this. It's like they're waiting for this audience to tell them what they want.
They're waiting for you, the NASA administrator, Richard C. Hoagland. Let's go
in
to
your dreams, George.
Hey, that's how things happen. You dream. Let's go to Arizona, Dennis, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Dennis.
Good to talk to you, George.
Thanks,
and,
Dennis.
Richard, y'all do great work. My question is for Richard. At the end of one of Zachariah Sitchin's books, he did a blurb on one of the moons of Mars and sent some pictures, and the satellite got knocked out. Was that not the same moon, or was that part of the same story?
It's the same moon. It was back in 1989. The Russians sent two spacecraft in 88. Takes several months to get to Mars, you know, with rockets and chemical propulsion. They sent two spacecraft. They lost one in deep space, you know, some stupid error. The second spacecraft, Phobos 2, arrived safely. I'm sorry, Phobos 1, went into Mars orbit. They took a lot of pictures and infrared imagery of Mars, of the surface, and then they started moving in toward Phobos, where they were supposed to land a little kind of sub-spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And as they got close, something happened, and they lost the signal, and a whole cover story about them being shot down and a huge spacecraft appearing in the cameras and all that, all disinformation, because they were able to, as they flew by Phobos several times, George, measure the mass, and from the photos, measure the volume, and their paper, published in Nature, which is the preeminent scientific journal of planet Earth, announced in October of 1989 that Phobos had to be at least one-third hollow. And I'll bet you never heard that story.
You know, that's probably why John Lear might think that this moon is artificial.
Well, John Lear thinks it's artificial because he's listening to all his intel buddies, and they're giving him a bunch of claptrap. That's a whole other discussion.
Alan, east of the Rockies, Brooklyn. Go ahead, Alan.
George, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Welcome back to New York.
Thank you.
Richard, I respect your opinion. I look forward to you coming on the show, but that's pretty hard to convince me on this.
I'm not
with all the probes, with all the probes that we sent around Mars.
Hang on, I'm going to publish the data, and the data will either convince you or it won't. All I'm doing is
telling
you what
we're going to publish. I'd like to read that book. You're
not
a scientist, and I respect you. But
No. This is not a book. This is a free paper on Enterprise. Everyone anywhere on the planet can download it when I finish it and post it.
When's it going to be up, Richard?
As soon as I'm done processing. Remember, I'm doing this by trial and error. I only lucked on the algorithm tonight that got me a partial view of what's really there. Obviously, we have a vast coast family. I now am on Facebook. I've got something like 10,000
friends. You're back on Facebook.
We're back on Facebook. They lifted the ban
now,
for some reason.
Talk about a conspiracy.
Yeah, I haven't been able to post on Facebook for 6 months. And a couple weeks ago, suddenly I was able to get in. I've got 10,000 fans and friends together.
Good for you.
A lot of those are physicists, computer experts. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of feedback tonight of programs to use. I'm going to put our data out. I'm going to let them work with it. They'll send it back to me. This will be a community effort, and we will blow the lid off this cover-up that's been going on since at least 1966 when Sagan and Schlafsky tried to tell the world what this might really be.
But you can understand, though, why someone like Alan and others probably, too, would say, come on, this is not a spacecraft around Mars. It's a moon, a chunk of rock that something is weird about.
Well, everything is always abstractly bizarre until it's proven not to be. Remember, this century and the last century were irrevocably changed by several people working under a tennis court in Chicago at the middle of World War II that nobody knew anything about, doing something that most people would have thought was absolutely science fiction, splitting an atom. And yet that act has defined the world that you and I were born into, George, and have grown up in, right?
That's true.
It shaped the planet we live on. Unbelievable things happen all the time, and when people look back, they say, oh, I knew it all along.
By the way, Webmaster Lex has John Lear booked on his Streamlink chat on Wednesday, March 24th. I think you did that some time ago, didn't you?
I did that a long time ago.
Did you have
a
good time? Good. Hartford, Connecticut, we go. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes, Richard. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hi, you mentioned the Russians. As you well know, as I know, the fall of next year, 2011, the Russians will send the spacecraft, unmanned spacecraft, Phobos Grunt, meaning Phobos soil, to orbit, land on Phobos, and bring back a sample of the soil of Phobos back to Earth. Would you tell the audience in detail what do you think that mission may find out about Phobos?
Well, the Russians, I think, are very perceptive. They have delayed their mission until 2011 to arrive in 2012, the same as NASA has delayed our next big Mars mission called Mars Science Laboratory, MSL, to leave in 2011 and get there in 2012, because 2012 is going to be, I think, the year when this becomes officially public. And the Russians are landing in a spot that was actually photographed by these cameras on the Mars Express, and there are two photos, one of which has an inset with two little red dots marking where the Russians intend to land. Well, they intend to land where I'm seeing some of these ruins better preserved than other places on the surface of this moonlet.
I'll tell you one thing, Richard. Over the next couple of years, as we get toward 2012, this is going to be an exciting, fiery trip for us, isn't it?
Remember what Art used to say?
I want to take a ride. And that's what it's going to be. It sure is. It's just it's amazing that all this seems to be coming down at the same time.
Well, you know, look, you got to look at the economic advantages if this revolution really takes off. For instance, President Obama is going to call this meeting in a month. We don't know who, what, how, whenever. The audience, I think this audience should respond to the White House and tell them exactly the kind of space program they want.
Should we set the agenda?
We should set the American people should set the agenda, and the Coast audience is at the cutting edge of the American people in terms of the future. And for all us in California, you and everybody else in California, you should definitely have Arnold Schwarzenegger, governor of California, and his wife Maria as delegates to this space summit, because California stands to benefit economically the most from a real space program that would bring back jobs and security and technology and the future to California, where the future always has been born up until the last several decades when we outshipped it and outsourced it all over the world.
Well, I'm looking forward to this posting on theenterprisemission.com. How about any conferences, anything coming up for you?
Nothing in the immediate future, but stay tuned because I bet that's going to change.
In San Diego, one question they asked me, if Richard C. Hoagland indeed might have been an alien who came here. What do you think? Yes or no, Richard?
The answer is no.
All right, you got it. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks.
It's Richard C. Hoagland, and I'll be back in just a moment as we talk with Tricia McKinnon about some ancient mystery schools. Should be a fascinating moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. If you need to email me, George at coast2coastam.com.